So thankful you guys are with us. Welcome to Bethlehem Church. Thanks for worshiping with us across our campuses this morning. We are so glad you are here. Let me give a big welcome. Many of you know we're in a season where we're beginning a new partnership with the church in St. Croix. Yes, that is not Walton County. That is St. Croix. And that's in the Virgin Islands, an opportunity that arose. That's the first Sunday. Pastor Joel is with them, and we're just partnering with them for a season, seeing what God does with it, see where he takes it. But this is their first Sunday on island in St. Croix. They're with us. Would you guys welcome them in, St. Croix Christian Church? So that's where, when I'm not here, that's where I'm going to be. No, I'm joking. So St. Croix, we're glad you're with us on island. We're here slogging it out in Barrow County. And so, but we love it. Let me say, we kicked off Thursday nights, and the idea for Thursday nights was there was going to be more room in this service. So, but praise the Lord, it's the law of the nets. We open up seats, more people come. 650 people called Thursday night their first service. How crazy is that? Right? And so, to those, say thank you. If you're back, I guess you needed a double dose and you missed the point, but we're glad you're here too, for whatever that means. But let me explain the idea of chasing pieces. We're going to spend about 6 weeks here. And the simple idea is the person that you came with, for about 20 seconds, what did you want to be? When you were a kid, when you were young, when you were naive, and the world was just your oyster to go get, what did you want to be when you were a kid? The person you came with, person sitting around you, 20 seconds, what was your plan? Who did you want to be when you grew up? What did you want to be when you were a kid? So, some of us want to be firefighters. Firefighter, raise your hand. Some of you are firefighters, and you're like, it's not what I thought it'd be, right? Some of you want to be cops, right? Some of us want to be school teachers. Some of us want to be famous athletes. Some of us want to be millionaires. How's that working out for you? Some of us wanted to be famous musicians. Some of us women had the marriage of our dreams, the wedding of our dreams that we've been planning since we were five. Right? Others of us guys were just, we didn't think about marriage, you know, when we were five and we wanted to be a cowboy. Any cowboys in the room? Yeah, you're with me. Whatever it is, my dad was a pastor. And so I respect him, admired him. He went to be with Jesus a few years ago. But for me growing up, like the idea of being a pastor just didn't scream awesome. Right? I know. Look, it didn't scream fun. He wore a suit all the time and he had to do weddings and funerals. And that just didn't come off like, man, that's what I want to do. Right? Do weddings and funerals and wear suits all the time. That just wasn't my idea of a big, big time. And so for me, though, I had a kid that had a big imagination. I was naive and dumb and young, and you can be anything when you're five or six. And I just had this infatuation that I wanted to be this guy right here. You know what I mean? I mean, he... Now, make sure for all you Marvel fans, any Marvel fans in the room, okay, I'm not talking about Tom Holland here. I'm not talking about Andrew Garfield. I'm not even going crazy old school talking about Tobey Maguire. I'm talking about comic book Saturday morning cartoon Spider-Man. Anybody in the room with me? Right? And I just loved it because he was this frail dude that could shoot webs and start things, stop things. And so that was my idea. I told this story a few years ago, but it helps you understand me. I was a kid with like this big imagination. And so in my mind, when Spider-Man, I loved it. We lived on about an acre. And on my front yard, I would, you know, shoot webs in my mind at squirrels and trees and cars driving by. And I just loved the idea of being Spider-Man. I mean, stopping bad guys, the whole deal. My dad was a pastor, and his church was across the street. In those days, if you were a pastor, a lot of times they gave what's called a parsonage or a pastorium, right? The church would give you a house, which everybody's like, that's great. Well, let me tell you really what it was. We're going to pay you dirt cheap, and you better be grateful because we're going to give you a house, right? I'm not bitter at all, I promise. I've been through counseling, but that was the idea years ago if you pastored a little Baptist church, okay? And so that was the thing. And so I would love to play out on the front lawn. The house was across the street from the church. But in my mind, when when Spider-Man shot his web, he would flick his wrist and release his middle finger, right? That was the idea. Again, 6 years old, what do I know? he would flick his wrist with all kind of force. And as he did this, he would release his middle finger. Flick his wrist, and I thought flick a web, but it was actually flicking something else, right? Now, what you got to do is get in your mind. This was kind of how I grew up and had a big time. And so I would sit on the front lawn of the house I was in across from my dad's church. You're tracking with me. And I loved it because Spider-Man can stop anything with a web. And so a car would drive by and bam, just like that. Right? Other car went the other way, bam, just like that. If you want to get crazy, I'd double fist that bad boy, bam, bam. Right? You remember? And if they honk the horn, I'm going to give you another one. Take it to your mom. You know what I mean? Well, my dad sees this happening. Okay, true story. God is my witness. Hand on the Bible. My dad sees this happening, and he's like, oh, man. He comes running out. It's like, Jason, what are you doing? I'm like, Dad, I'm a Spider-Man, right? He said, you are not now Spider-Man, nor are you ever going to be Spider-Man. He was correct, and I'm a pastor, right? That's how it all worked out. But when you're kids, it's clear what you want to be in your mind. But as we get older, seasons of life, we have dreams and we have thoughts and marriage and job and career path. We never stop dreaming. We never stop hoping. But what I found true to be in my own life and what I've found pastoring people over the years, here's the idea, is oftentimes there's a gap between what I thought my life would be and what my life actually is. Like, what do you mean, Pastor? Like, what I thought my marriage would be like and what it's actually been like. What I thought my career path would be and what my career path has actually been. What I thought my 20s would be like and what my 20s have actually been. What I thought being a parent would be like and what it actually is. What I thought my retirement years, what I thought my empty nest years would be like and what they actually are. Church, it is in that gap. We don't talk enough about it because it's in that gap people live. And here's the idea. And it's in this gap between what we thought life would be and what life actually is that we're always doing this, chasing peace. What do you mean peace? Peace of mind. Content in our spirit. Peace in relationships. Listen, everybody stops chasing perfect at some point, and you should. Sane people know life's not perfect. No perfect career path. No perfect man, no perfect woman, no perfect marriage, no perfect kids. Everybody stops chasing perfect, and they should. Listen to me. Nobody stops chasing peace no matter the situation, and they shouldn't. We want peace. We're done with perfect. We get that. We're grown adults here. We live in the real world. There is no perfect, but we do want peace. And so I want to ask a question. This is a question we're going to take a deep dive in over the next 6 weeks. Because I think it's at the bottom of this question is where there's actually this idea of peace in this life and not just preacher talk. Peace. What do you mean? If you're taking notes, get your Bethlehem Church app. Here's the simple question we're going to take a deep dive on for the next 6 weeks. How would your outlook in life change if you believed God was really with you in every situation? How would your outlook on life change, in life change, if you believed God was really with you in every situation? Now listen to me, not coffee mug theology, God is with you. Not bumper sticker cliche, God's with me. Not Emmanuel at Christmas, God with us, that we kind of say, oh, yeah, 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 God's with us. Oh, yeah. No, church, listen to me. You actually believed the power and the presence of God is with you in every situation, as real as you're sitting in here, that God is present with you. If you actually believe that in every situation, how would your outlook shift? Like, what do you mean every situation? In the divorce that you went through. And the health diagnosis you didn't expect. Like every situation. And the fact that you got passed over for a promotion when you, in your mind, deserved it. And the disability you were born with. And the prejudices you have faced. and the fact that the town you are living in is not the town you really want to live in. Come on. Right? Anybody? Has that ever been you? We've been in a place where you're like, man, this isn't what I planned. How would your outlook change if you were convinced God's in this? Even though it feels like things are off track, even though I'm in a place I didn't see coming, I didn't plan on coming, I didn't ask for, but still God is in this. If you got your Bibles, go to Genesis, first book of the Bible, Genesis 50. And for the next 6 weeks, I want to introduce you to a guy who lived the idea, the life of what he thought life would be and what life actually was. Genesis 50, his name is Joseph. Over the next 6 weeks, I want to walk you through his story. There are two chapters. Genesis is the first book of the Bible. Two chapters in Genesis. I think it's one of the most important, if not the most important book of the Bible, because it sets up a framework for how we're to see life. Right? But here's what's interesting. There are two chapters in Genesis given to the creation account. How all this came to be. Our worldview, let me tell you how much it gets, like creation account, two chapters. The life of Joseph in the first book of the Bible gets 12. Why? Maybe at the very beginning, God was telling us there's a way you think your life's going to go and there's a way it's going to go. There's a way you think and you plan and you hope life will go, and there's a way life goes. And how you experience me is where you find peace in the gap. Joseph was a dreamer. God placed dreams in his life. He was incredibly gifted and talented. God was with him. Joseph was a man born into a dysfunctional family. Can I get a witness in the room? Don't raise your hand or point, right? By a dysfunctional family, he was sold into slavery by his brothers. I think that's dysfunctional, right? But the Lord was with him. Joseph was a guy who made the right decision but did not reap the benefits of right decision making. In fact, he inherited bad consequences for making the right decision. You'll see in the story, and God was with him. And God was with him. It's the idea of being falsely accused and yet God being with you. It's a story of being forgotten about, listen to me, church, by people that you helped. Joseph helped some guys out he's forgotten about and left alone, but yet God was with him. It's a story about finding favor in a place you never expected to find favor. It's a story about landing a job you never planned on landing a job. It's a story about confronting people 20 years later that betrayed you, that sold you into slavery, and having their life now in your hands. All along the story in Genesis 37 through 50, all through the story, you see a guy who had plans and dreams. Listen, here's the crazy part. God actually put it in his heart. Experienced life in a way that he never planned on. And here's the crazy thing. Five different times, and I'll show you over the next 6 weeks, this phrase comes up in Joseph's life. Here's what it was. The Lord was with Joseph. Lean in across all of our campuses. And every time that phrase comes up, that scripture comes up, he's not living the life he planned on living. Whoo! He's not experiencing the life. Things aren't going as planned. The Lord was with Joseph. And I want to skip to the end, Genesis chapter 50. I'll come back and fill in some of the story as we go. But he's confronted 20 years later with the brothers who's betrayed him. He's now been elevated to second command in Egypt. He was an Israelite. He's in a foreign land. God has showed him favor over a long period of time. Not overnight, but over a long period of time, he's risen to be second in command. His brothers who betrayed him, who are now going to sit and talk to him, who really their life is in his hands because of a famine that's hit the land. And there's a statement that Joseph makes that I think is at the bottom of this idea. How would your outlook change if in every situation, the ones you chose or the ones you didn't, that you actually believed God was with you? Genesis 50, we're going to skip, kind of spoiler alert, we'll come back and build the story as the series goes. But Joseph said to them, his brothers, don't fear, for I am in the place of God. So they know they've hosed this guy over. They know what they've done, and they don't know what's going to happen. And so Joseph begins in Genesis 50 by going, am I in the place of God? If there's anything he has learned in the last 20 years of experiencing life the way he didn't plan on experiencing, he's not God. He's not God. And then he says this, "As for you," talking to his brothers, "you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good." Church, lean in. God does not orchestrate pain in your life to prove a point. But God will use the pain in your life as a platform for his glory. Church, some of you need to hear that again. God does not orchestrate pain in your life to prove some kind of crazy cosmic point. But God will allow in a broken world pain in your life, and he will use it for his platform and his glory. At the heart of this statement right here, Genesis 50, verse 20, "As for you," as for this world, as for my situation, as for people who have hurt me, they very well may have meant evil against me, but God meant it for good. Come on, church. Here's what Paul says in Romans as he talks about the power of the Holy Spirit being present in our life and how Jesus changes us. He says the same thing in the New Testament. Here's the way he says, a very famous verse. "And we know that for those who love God," here it is, "all things." What does all things mean? "All things work together for the good for those who are called according to his purpose." All things, every situation, the plan that you had and the life that you're living, the picture that you had and the reality that you're living in, all things means both your giftedness and your weakness. All things means all things. The center of that statement and how we live in that is, do you actually live a life where you believe God is with you in every situation? Let me give you a little encouragement very briefly. This is what some of you came for and you didn't even know it. This one statement's all you needed to hear. Some of you across our campuses, this is for you, church. What I am saying to you is detours aren't dead ends because God is with us. Anybody had to take a detour when you're traveling? Not what you planned. That's what a detour is. The things that hurt in life, God can use for the good even in when it hurts because he's present. When we are disappointed by our situation, when we are disappointed by our place in life, that doesn't mean we are disqualified from God using us for his glory. When we're disappointed, this is what life is, and disappointed. We feel disappointed. Listen to me. I get it. That does not disqualify us from being used by God. What we did not ask for or plan on, church, listen to me, God can still use. And this is coming from a guy who at the age of 17 buried his mother after a 2.5-year battle with cancer. My formative years of my life, 15, 16, 17, we prayed for my mother to be healed. We believed she could be healed. Our plan was for her, plan A was for my mom to be healed. She died when I was 17. Here's what I'm looking at you saying. Detours are not dead ends when God is with you. This is coming from a guy who 17 years ago planted a church with a group of friends. We believe God put something in our heart. God put a dream in our heart. 17 years ago. When I was 15, 17 years ago, I'm joking, I was a little older than that, 17 years ago, I planted a church with some friends, believed God put something in our heart, God put a dream, God put a gift, and guess what, it failed. It wasn't a moral failure. 18 months in, it failed. What do you mean it failed? Nobody came. Here's a little trick about church, people need to come. Ever fail? Listen to me. It's coming from a guy who's failed. Don't let this fool you. This is coming from a guy who has failed. And here's what I learned in my failure. Detours aren't dead ends when God is with you. Detours aren't dead. This is coming from a guy who pastors a lot of single moms and single dads. Here's what I tell you about single moms and single dads. None of them said, this is how I thought life would go. But detours aren't dead ends when God is with you. This is coming from a dude, right, who pastors a lot of guys in this church who are not in plan A of their profession, not in plan B of their career. They're not in plan C, plan D, plan E, plan F. They're in plan L, man. And what I am saying to you is detours aren't dead ends because God is with us. How would your outlook on life change? Listen to me, church. Not coffee mug, God is with me. Not some random worship song that you sing without even thinking about it. God is with me. No, you actually believed as sure as you're sitting here sucking oxygen, God is present with you. In every situation, how would things change? Am I going to define God by my circumstances, or am I going to trust God is who he says he is despite my circumstances? That's the question of life for believers. Am I going to define God by the circumstances and situations in my life, or am I going to trust God is who he says he is in spite of my circumstances? Church, you with me? That's the question of chasing peace. Everybody gives up on perfect because we're mature adults. Nobody gives up on chasing peace because all of us, no matter our situation, want a sense of peace. Let me pull this chart back up right quick. What I thought, let me get real practical and help you. I'm going to give you something super tangible today just to begin. We're going to unpack this. I'm going to give you something really tangible, like take home, put it to practice, not just me talking. What I thought life would be, what life actually is, this is chasing peace. So I read a study done by Harvard Research about 10 years ago. Now Harvard, when you say Harvard, like Harvard, like Harvard, like big deal Ivy League school. Some of you Bulldogs, the Bulldogs play them? No, we don't. Right? That's your epitome of a college. The Bulldogs don't play them in a row school. Okay, whatever. But all that to say Harvard, Ivy League smart folk, right? Not the bastion of conservative theology, though. Let's just say that at Harvard, right? They did a research that was published about 10 years ago in a science magazine that talking about people's thought patterns, how people think. And here's what they found. 50% of people's waking hours, like when you're awake and alert, 50% of people's waking hours are spent thinking about the future or thinking about the past. I'll say it again. 50% of people's waking hours, their thought patterns, thinking about the past or thinking, now that doesn't mean 10 years from now or 10 years ago. That could mean 2 days from now and 2 days ago. Some of you moms are like, that's just life. I got to get planned for them to eat. You know what I mean? My kids eat, right? But 50% of your time, your thought patterns are dominated. Here's what I'm saying. How much more is that when you find yourself in a place in life you didn't really want to be? How much more amplified is that when things don't go as planned? When how you prayed isn't the way things turned out? How much more do our thought patterns get crazy? What do you mean? Put this down. Most anxieties, most worries, and most fears come from focusing on the future. Like, if I were to ask you right now, or when you got home, you want a great practice. I don't know if you ever go home and do anything I say. That's fine. But if you want like real tangible, real practical, you were to go home and write down or get your notepad out on your phone, right? Take notes. Write down the things that cause you anxiety, continual things that cause you anxiety, that cause you worry, that ultimately are the source of your fear. If you were just to write them and spend some time where your thought patterns come back to, the continual things that bring you anxiousness and worry, and at the bottom of it, there's fear. If you were to come back to it over and over again, I bet you those things are dealing with things that are happening in the future. Almost all of us. Now, you may be dealing with something now that causes stress, but your fear, worry, and anxiety means, what does that mean for the future? So what I'm saying is oftentimes when we get to a place in life we didn't plan on being, our marriage, our 20s, having kids, our careers, and we're in that chasing peace where this isn't what we're planning, how much more is this amplified? That when we think about what happens is when we're not where we want to be and we think about the future, listen, church, oftentimes we resign ourselves. When we face the detours of life, we resign ourselves to, it's just the way it's going to be. It's just my plot in life. And we cast doubt, and we cast fear, and we cast worry. Because of our current situation, and because things didn't go as planned, we resign ourselves. We stop hoping, we stop dreaming, we stop believing, and we just kind of go, well, it just is the way things are. Just it's my plot in life. And we project doubt, and we project fear, and we project worry. Oftentimes when we're in a place where it may not be the worst place ever, but things aren't going as planned. Our health isn't as planned. Our kids, their behavior, their choices aren't as planned. We see the situation in life. The job didn't go as planned. We begin to project into the future. Well, that's just the way life's going to be. We stop dreaming. We stop hoping. We stop believing. And we project worry, fear, and doubt. But here's the second part. I'd also contend most sorrows, most regrets, and most resentments come from focusing on our past. If you were to give me a few minutes and said, write down the things that you are most sorrowful for that you have resentments against or resentments toward, you were to do the same practice, I would bet when you wrote down the sorrows in your life, the regrets in your life, the resentments, I would take an educated guess and say the majority of them are about things that have happened in your past. All right, we're people who have a hard time living in the present. And so what happens is when we're in a season we don't want to be in, we're either in the future casting blame and, casting doom, or we're stuck in the past trying to explain why we got to where we are. Because of the way he treated me, because of the way they treated me, because they forgot about me, because I didn't get the job I should have had, because God didn't show up the way I thought he would. Church, how much of our time when we're in life, what I thought life would be, what my life actually is, do we project fear and doom and doubt into the future, or do we look to fix the blame to why we got to where we got to? Come on. This is life. 50% of our waking hours we spend thinking about the future or the past. How much destructiveness happens oftentimes in our thought patterns when we're not where we want to be? How much wreckage is done? If you've been at Bethlehem Church for any length of time, you've heard me say this. I say it every 6 months. I should probably say it every 6 weeks. So if you go, I've heard you say that before, because I have. Right? What do you mean? You, my friend, talk to yourself more than anybody else talks to you. Some of you are like, man, my husband, he's a talker. That's not many of you, right? Some of you are like, my wife's a talker. Right, my best friend, let me tell you who talks to you more than anybody else, you. You have more self-conversations going on in your head at all the time. Right, and so what begins to happen is we are a society of people that have a difficult time living in the present, especially when where we're at is not really where we plan on being. Anybody Mac users, anybody iPhone users, anybody Apple users in the room, raise your hand. All right, that's a lot of you guys. Thursday night, they were all PC people. They looked at me like I was crazy, right? But if you are a MacBook user, you have an iPhone, you know what this is right here. This is referred in Apple world as the pinwheel of death. Like, you can Google it. Really, that's what it's called. That right there, if you're working on something on your computer or your phone, this comes up. That, my friends, is called the pinwheel of death. What that means is there's an operating system off in your life. Well, not in your life, off in your computer. Well, I'm about to make it in your life in a second. I just got ahead of myself in the illustration, okay? The pinwheel of death. Here's what that means. You got a software problem. You got a lot of screens going on and you haven't done a software. There's an operating system off. Like, that's not just gonna go away. There's a virus attacking your computer. Things aren't right. Oftentimes, listen to me, what happens in our life is we don't even realize our soul, when we're in a place where we're continually projecting the future and it's fear and it's doom and it's bad, or we're stuck in the past blaming why we are where we are, you don't realize this is going off in your soul. There's an operating system off. Where does addictions come from? When the operating system's off, you look for some type of peace. Where did dumb choices come from? When the operating, like there's something off. We don't have peace. There's an operating system that is off. Here's the thing. The problem with our thoughts continually projecting into the future and the problem with our thoughts always being fixed in the past, here's the problem. You live in the present. The problem with our thought patterns, church, you can't change the past. You can't control the future, but what you do have is the presence of God in the moment. And we are people who have a hard time living in the moment, especially when the moment we're in is not the moment we want to be in. It's not the moment we want to be in. So I want to give a reset button, because when that pinwheel of death, for a guy who, now all you IT people, you can send me an email later and tell me what's really going on my computer. But when that pinwheel of death comes up, my best hope is to do a reset. To do a hard reset. Now hopefully that thing goes. I want to give us a reset. Because chasing peace, listen, 12 chapters given, I'm starting the series. 12 chapters given to a guy in Genesis, 2 to the creation account, 12 to a guy who experienced life not the way he planned on it. And if I could give us a hard reset, just to kind of reset our minds this week, to reset our hearts over and over again, because if you are not here, you're going to get there at some point. Here's the reset. Where my feet are planted, that is where my God is present. Where my feet are planted is where my God is present. Some of us, the invitation that's fresh and new. For some of us, like we haven't prayed seriously. And by prayed, actually try to talk to God in some time. And for some of us, we feel like we're hitting a wall. I'm going to give you something to just begin, especially when we're in a place we don't want to be. Here's a way. I'm just going to give you an invitation this week. As you pray, say out loud to yourself, where my feet are planted, I believe my God is present. Confess that. Speak it into reality. Where my feet are planted, my God is present. Listen to me. Some of you, you got to reset. I'm going to give you the power to reset your thoughts this week. Because you're going to jump into the future, or you're going to fix blame in the past, because that's what we do oftentimes, especially when we find ourselves in a place we don't want to be. I want to give you something. Here's what you're going to say. We're going to do a little 2 Corinthians 10 here, which says, take every thought captive. Here it is. Where my feet are planted, my God is present. Church, this is big. God does not reside in the future, nor is he residing in the past. Yes, he's sovereign over it. God does not reside in the future, nor does he reside in the past. What do you mean? But some of us act like that. We sing songs that God is with me, but we act like he's in the future and the past. What do you mean? Some of us think because of the choices we made, because of where life's lived, God's in the past. Go, well, you left me behind. This was my plan. This is what I gifted you for. But you just blown it. God's in the past, pouting. Well, you're on your own. No! Nor is God in the future saying, well, when you get your act right, I'll be up here waiting on you. Well, when you get through whatever you're going through, you come on up here. My friends, he's not in the past with his arms folded. He's not in the future going, come on, catch up with me. He is right in the present with his arms wide open saying, I am with you to the end of the age. Where my feet are planted, my God is present. That is not bumper sticker theology. That's the hope of our faith. That's the center of our faith. Church, Joseph, here's what you're going to find out about the Old Testament when I teach it. Joseph's not the point. You're not going to get 5 principles for how to be like Joseph, because Joseph's not the point. Joseph's just a dude. Joseph's life is a picture of what you and I's life are. Can I tell you who the point is? Jesus. Joseph points to Jesus. Everything points to Jesus. What do you mean? Jesus had some things to say about peace. John 14. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. And here's the best part. Not as the world gives. Here's the peace the world gives. Pause right here. When everything goes to plan. That's the peace. The peace the world gives is when your kids nail it. when you get the promotion, when the bank account's full, when everybody's in harmony, when you're living your best life now, that's all the world's got. That's the hope. What, here's the peace the world gives when everything goes to plan. What did Jesus say? That's not the peace I give. See, the peace the world gives is peace from bad circumstances. The peace Jesus gives is peace in your circumstances, no matter what they are. As the world gives, so let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. Here's the coolest part. When Jesus said this, Peter in John 13 had just said, Jesus, when they go to kill, like no matter what happens, even if they go to kill, I am with you to the end. Peter just told them that, John 13, I'm with you. He was with him until a few hours later when he denied him three times. In the middle of this, here's what Jesus says, don't let your heart be troubled. You think you're going to always get it right? You're not, but my peace I give you. John 14, Jesus is telling them, my physical presence isn't going to always be with you, but my spirit, my peace will be. See, what the disciples thought, what they held Jesus to is what we hold Jesus to in America. American Christians, we have this theology that if God is really good, our life should go as planned. The disciples did the same thing. Well, you're here, so you're the Messiah, so you're going to set up your kingdom, which means my life's going to go just as planned. And Jesus tells them, I'm not always going to be right here with you, but I'm giving you my spirit. And the peace I give you is not as the world gives you. I give you a peace, no matter. Church, how would your outlook on life change if you actually believed in every situation God is with? Jesus never, like, it's so cool. You see that, you'll see it over the next few weeks. And I got to shut up because I got another crowd coming. Now listen right here. Listen, this is so good. Jesus never jumps into a scene and says, problem solved. I'm here, problem solved. You know what he says? Peace be with you. Peace I give you. Not as the world gives. Father, I pray for my brothers and sisters. And around this room, if you're in this room, the Holy Spirit's with us. Will you stand all around this room here in the South Venue? Chasing peace. That's what we all want. We gave up on perfect a long time ago. But we all chase peace. Father, I pray that, Lord, we would just take that statement to the core of our soul this week. Lord, where our feet are planted, our God is present. Some of us in this room feel like plan A is off track. But where our feet are planted, our God is present. Some of us, the picture of life and what life is way different. But God, that you would just refresh. You are not in the past with your arms crossed. You're not in the future going, hurry up. You're right here in these moments. In a few minutes, we're going to have some prayer teams down front. We love to pray peace over you. That's our hope, is to pray peace over you. And what I want us to do is a song we're going to teach you this series, because it's a powerful song. And it's simply claiming what is true. And here's the song. It simply says this: fear is not my future. You are. Heartbreak's not my home. You are. Sickness isn't my story. You are. So Caleb's going to sing this over us. I just want you to receive it. In fact, we're going to say this to remind ourselves together. Where my feet are planted, my God is present. Say that with me, church. Where my feet are planted, my God is present. Say it one more time. Where my feet planted, my God is present.